Go ahead and take out your Bibles and open up to Psalm 4, the fourth psalm. This morning what I want to talk about is have faith and wait for the Lord. This is not a lesson to contradict James chapter 2, where James says that faith without works is dead. Sometimes just simply being still and being silent is just as much a work as some of the things of faith that we think of from the Old Testament that we say, oh, that's great faith. Whenever David goes out and he kills Goliath with one single round stone, we say, oh, look at the great faith to stand up and do those things. Whenever you see Noah in the Old Testament, and he's told there's going to be a great flood, and he goes out and builds perhaps the biggest boat that had ever been built at the time, he goes out and does that, and we say, what great faith. Whenever we even take time and go through the Old Testament in the book of Judges, and we see Gideon having this army of 300 going to take on a people who you can't even count their camels, and we say, look at that great faith. I think there are times that we forget. Sometimes in just being still and waiting on the Lord is just as much great faith as killing Goliath, surviving the flood, and overcoming an army that is your way out and matched on number-wise. I want you to look here at Psalm 4. I want you to look down at verse 3 to start, and then we're going to look at three quick examples. But know that the Lord has set apart the godly man for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Realize that as God's people, we have God's attention if we're walking with him. Verse 4, tremble and do not sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. And then it uses this Hebrew term, it says Salah. Salah is kind of a musical term. It has the same idea as whenever we're singing and you run into something that's a repeat. And it says, basically, go back and make sure you read that last statement again and understand it, comprehend it. Take a good look at it. So, meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. Whenever difficulties come, he says, tremble at the Lord. Don't sin. Don't just take off and do something. It's time to meditate upon the Lord on your bed. Before you go to bed at night is almost the idea. And be still. Sometimes the right reaction is to simply be still and to be quiet and to wait on the Lord. Notice the next verse. Here's verse 5. It doesn't mean do nothing at all. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and trust in the Lord. Here's the response. You still do what's right. Offer sacrifice. Trust in the Lord. Verse 6. Many are saying, who will show us any good? Lift up the light of your countenance upon us, O Lord. Who will show us any good? Who's going to do it? Verse 7. You have put gladness in my heart, more than when their grain and new wine abound. That's where God can lift you up. He can take you from a place of you're afraid of what's going on around you. If you put your trust in him, have faith and wait for the Lord. Not meaning do nothing. Offer up your sacrifices and trust in him. He says, you'll be lifted up to joy even beyond after the harvest. I don't know for some of you, if you butcher your own meat or you grow your own crops, there's something quite fun and unique after a long winter without any tomatoes of pulling the first one off the vine and it's ready. There's something about slaughtering a hog that whenever you get that first cut and you say, it's time for some fresh bacon. But you start to notice, he says here, more than when their grain and new wine abound, more than when everything else is overflowing, God can bring you a joy in the midst of all this difficulty. Verse 8, in peace I will both lie down and sleep. For you alone, O Lord, make me to dwell in safety. It's not the walls, it's not the home security systems, it's not all those things that allow us to sleep safe. It's knowing that God is here to take care of us. He is our shepherd. And to see here, he says, "You alone, O Lord, make me to dwell in safety. I'm going to turn toward you." He says, "In peace, I'll both lie down and sleep." Even in the middle of difficulty. You remember whenever David is being pursued by Saul? Saul wants to kill him. He's tried a couple times before, but unsuccessfully. And David, in the middle of being preyed upon, lies down and sleeps. He takes rest in God. He says, "I have faith. I'll wait for the Lord to destroy Saul, because I'm not going to do it by my own hand, because Saul is one of God's anointed." And he sleeps sound. I want to show you some more stories in the Old Testament, rather quickly, of seeing people who this is their response in difficulty. "I'm going to have faith, and I'm going to wait on the Lord." Notice, look over at the book of Esther. Look at Esther chapter 4. I just want to really look at two verses here. Haman has come before the king and has said, "There's a people who are scattered in among the Babylonians." He says, "We need to destroy them all." He says, "I'll give you 10,000 talents of silver if you just let me go through and destroy them." That would be the equivalent of somebody saying, in present day economy, "Let me give you $216 million and let me destroy them." Basically, a holocaust to destroy all the Jews in Babylon is what's going on here. Here's Mordecai. He's a Jew. The girl that he raised, his brother's daughter, is now the queen, but nobody realizes that she's a Jew. And this proclamation gets issued that all the Jews will be destroyed on a certain day in the 12th month. Even the queen doesn't know about it. Here is verse 13. Here's his relaying of a message to the queen. "Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther." This is Esther chapter 4, verse 13. "Then Mordecai told him to reply to Esther, 'Do not imagine that you in the king's palace can escape any more than all the Jews. Don't think that you're going to be treated different. The decree is the decree.'" Verse 14, "For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise from the Jews from another place. And you and your father's house will perish, and who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this." I want you to see Mordecai. Look at what he's really saying to Esther, the queen. "It doesn't matter whether you act or not. God is going to deliver us." Did you hear that and what he said? Look at it again in verse 14. "For if you remain silent this time, relief and deliverance will arise from the Jews from another place." He has no doubt in what God's going to do. He doesn't say, "All of our hopes are on you, Esther. If you don't act, we're all goners." He says, "You can be silent and you can remain there, and God will deliver us in another way." What's Mordecai really saying? "I can be still and I can know that God's going to take care of me. But you have an opportunity." Maybe this is the whole reason why God got you to the point of being queen, was to deliver his people. But I want you to look at Mordecai. In the middle of there being a proclamation to wipe out all the people of your race, he says, "God's going to take care of us. We have safety. God's our protection. He's going to take care of us." How many times in our lives when we've been slandered against or spoken evil of, and we want to go make sure everybody knows that we didn't do anything wrong, we want to make sure, "Well, let's go do something. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to wait. I'll let God do the revealing. I'm going to be faithful toward him. We're just going to wait on the Lord. He'll protect us. He'll take care of us." Take Joseph in the book of Genesis, for example. He's thrown into prison for something he didn't do. He doesn't conjure up and say, hey, we need to have a trial on this matter. We need to make sure that everybody knows that I'm innocent here. He says, you know what? I'll just suffer right here in prison. I'll stay here until God moves me. Yep, I'm going to honor him. I'm going to offer the sacrifices, like it says in Psalm 4. He says, I'm going to be true to him, but I'm going to wait for him. And in waiting, what happens with Joseph? He's lifted up to number two in the nation. Even old Pharaoh King says, you can take in charge of everything except for me. All that comes from having faith and waiting for the Lord. Here's Mordecai. You've seen Joseph. Let's take a look at another one that was read just a little while ago. Look over at the book of Exodus, chapter 14. Now this tells you what works in opposition to that kind of attitude. Exodus chapter 14. The children of Israel have just been released, let go free from Egypt. All of the firstborn in Egypt are dead. And in moving forward, here they go. They get out to a place. They see that Pharaoh's army, his chariots, are tracking them down. And they've come to a peninsula where they're basically locked in by water on three sides and Pharaoh's army coming from the fourth side. Pharaoh's army is so big, here in Exodus 14, if you look down at verse 7, here's about the number of it. He says, and he took 600 select chariots, 600 of the best chariots, but there's more, and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. So it's not just 600, it's 600 and all the rest of the chariots in Egypt too. Well, that's a pretty big number. If you got 600 of the very best, you probably got more of those that aren't near as good. Maybe there could be more than 1,000 of them. You think you might hear that coming? How far do you have to be away from the interstate before you hear the cars go by? Maybe there's 1,000 of them. We know at least there's 602. But here they are, pressing down upon them. I want you to look down now at verse 10. It says, as Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them. Do we mention that there's an army with them too? It's not just chariots now. There's an army coming. You see, our numbers are getting bigger and bigger. And behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened, so the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. What happens when we as God's people only work off of our eyes and not off of faith? God, have you noticed that there's 1,000 chariots headed our way and there's marching people along with them? They're afraid. They're terrified. They're coming right at them. In any situation where we have in our lives, it's a trying time. There's something working in opposition to faith. It's fear. Fear is a natural opposition to faith. And we have to be a careful people. Because fear is so easy to grab a hold of. It's so easy to say, there's nobody here in between us and them. What could happen? We're locked in. Where could we go? We're debtors. We're goners. Notice how they respond. Here's their words. Look at verse 11. Then they said to Moses, is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Are you a two-faced servant? Are you really working for Egypt? Did they just not want to bury us all back there? So now they had to bury all their firstborn. Now you're just going to bring us all the way out here so that we could bury out in these big mass graves in the wilderness? Who said anything about them dying? But what are they being controlled by? Fear. By the way, 1 John says that perfect love casts out fear. So fear can also be something that decays away at love too. Fear decays away at faith. Fear toward God isn't encouraging. Fear toward anything else will only destroy you on the inside spiritually. whether it be love, whether it be faith, whether it be hope of what God promised to do. Notice the next part of verse 11. Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Verse 12. Is this not the word which we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? Didn't we tell you to leave us alone? If we just let you leave us alone, we'd be much better now. We'd be back in Egypt burying their dead, not our own. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. Does this sound like a group of people who are about to be saved? If we're the people who are going to be saved from this world alive, why does that sound so much like us? Where we put our fear in everything else as opposed to having faith and waiting for the Lord in times, offering to God what He deserves, trusting in the Lord. Notice what comes next. Here's verse 13. But Moses said to the people, notice where he starts. Do not fear. I'm sure they thought, is he not seeing what we're seeing? Does he need glasses? Do not fear. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians who you have seen today, you will never see them again forever. Verse 14, here's the key. The Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. The best move for you to make right now is to be quiet and to watch. That's the response. Have faith, wait for the Lord. And sure enough, that's what they do. And they see the angel of the Lord take up space in between them, their camp, and the camp of the Egyptians. The Egyptians don't even know they're getting close to Israel. Whenever it's time to move across, God tells Moses, stretch out your staff. The sea divides itself right in front of them. All of them cross over safely, and before daybreak comes, all of a sudden, those armies of Egypt see, hey, look, there they are. Let's go get them. They follow them right into the sea, and the Lord brings the sea right back on top of that big old army and all those select chariots and destroys every single one of them. And the next time they see them, it's their dead bodies that are floating up on the water on the other side of the sea. Moses saw it. He said, don't let fear control you. Have faith. Be silent. Offer to God what's right, and wait. Let's take a look at one more real quickly. Look over at the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 11. We could look at Genesis 22 for part of this, but we're not going to. Hebrews chapter 11. Look down at verse 17. Hebrews 11, 17. By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. Isaac, his name means laughter. God had made the promises in saying, it's going to be through Isaac that I'm going to give you all these nations and all these descendants. Isaac's still a boy, young boy at that. He's not married, doesn't have any kids on the way. God tells Abraham, you go offer him up. Abraham gets up the next morning. He takes the fire, he takes the wood, he takes the knife with him. He takes two servants, he even takes an animal with him. They travel 3 days' journey to Mount Moriah. It's not called Moriah yet, but Moriah means the Lord will provide. It's also going to be the place where the temple will be set up in centuries to come. In being there, he leaves the two servants behind and he says, we will go and we will offer up and we will return. we will return. That means Abraham and Isaac. But he's going to offer up Isaac. How could it be that he would say that they would both return? Here is faith. I want you to see this. Look at verse 19. Abraham considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. Abraham's plan in offering up Isaac as the burnt offering included him offering him up, that he would kill his son, he would burn him with fire until there was nothing but dust and ashes remaining. Abraham knew that this son was the same son who all the promises were through. There would be nobody else. Do you want to know what Abraham's plan was? Have faith and wait for the Lord. His plan: I'm going to offer up Isaac as a sacrifice. I'll offer him up as a burnt offering where he turns into nothing but ash and dust. And then I will sit down and I will wait for God to turn dust and ash into my son again. That was Abraham's plan. That's why he told those servants, we're going to go and we're going to offer and we're going to return. Abraham had no fear. If he had fear, his plan wouldn't have been to offer him up as a burnt offering. He says, I will do what is required of me. I will do it, and I will have faith, and I will wait for the Lord. When you lose a job and you put in all the applications, it's time to simply have faith and wait for the Lord. Whenever people slander your honorable name, it is time to have faith and wait for the Lord. When your mate will not honor the word and honor the Lord, it is time to offer what God expects, to have faith and to wait for the Lord. When someone is seeking out to destroy you, like we've seen in some of these stories, it's simply time to have faith and wait for the Lord, and to watch His hand work, and to watch Him do things that you could never do on your own. Mordecai couldn't destroy everybody. Moses and his army couldn't destroy Pharaoh's army. Abraham couldn't raise up his son. They just simply needed to have faith and wait for the Lord. Sometimes that is the greatest work of faith, is trusting and not becoming the one who speaks out, but being the one who's not motivated by fear, be careful when it creeps in, and to simply be silent and wait for God.